Hey, welcome back, students, and those of you who've heard this show before. I'm glad you're still with me. First-time listeners, I'm particularly glad you've tuned in. I'm your host, D.A. Arliss, welcoming you to another new episode of the Guitar Technique Tutor Podcast. My goal as a guitarist and instructor with decades of experience is to raise the quality of my students and all guitarists' playing level and understanding. So here I am, doing my part to spread the excellence, one guitarist at a time. So, how was your week? Any major triumphs or tragedies? I hope the former. This is episode 033, recorded on March 7th, 2011. My week was pretty much back to normal, whatever that is. Only a few students were missing from my schedule due to illness. Saturday morning, the E-Man and I were at Borders having a cup of our favorite beverage before we began a busy day, and I overheard a conversation there. I had all I could do not to butt in, but I didn't. I was so tempted, but I was strong. Here's the setup. A young man and young woman were at a table next to where I was sitting, and I was in a big cushy chair, so I was right by where the tables are set up. It sounded like a very informal job interview. He was interviewing her for some kind of SAT tutoring job or something along those lines. I'd say they were both in their early 20s, and I say that because of their appearance and that they were unable to say more than three words without the word like inserted in. You know, to quote the, it was like, they were like, talking like, about like a job. That kind of thing. Well, now, lest you think I was intentionally eavesdropping, I was not. I can't help that I'm an auditory or oral learner, and that my sense of hearing is probably the most dominant sense I have. So when I heard guitar, my radar honed in without me even being conscious of it doing so. She said something to the effect that she was thinking about learning to play the guitar. I resisted the temptation to hand her my business card. He gloated that he played. She asked what he recommended she do to learn to play the guitar. He said, and I'll omit the likes or I'll be recording until tomorrow, he said to get a song that she likes and learn the chords. She asked a very reasonable question, which is, how would she know how to play the chords? I liked her right away. He said, just to get a book with songs she likes and the chord diagrams would be in it. She asked what a chord diagram was. He was no less understandable to someone who has never looked at guitar music and knew nothing about guitar, and said, it shows where to put your fingers. She didn't really understand. It was very obvious she didn't understand. But I could infer from the tone in her voice that she just didn't want to appear stupid. He was interviewing her for a job, after all, and she didn't know what he was talking about. So if she indicated that, maybe she wouldn't get the job. So she just said, oh, that's a good idea. I'll do that. And boy, I wanted to intervene. She clearly didn't have a grasp of what he was saying. The vagaries he threw out there were something only someone with his experience would know, not something that a neophyte or a totally non-guitar player would know. Anyway, he resumed the interview process. It was just a remarkable thing that I heard. I couldn't really get over it. Anyway, if you're listening for the first time, please don't just get a book with chord diagrams in it and think you're learning to play the guitar. That's like memorizing a Chinese restaurant menu and thinking that because you did it, you speak Chinese. That's exactly what it's like. Anyway, about today's episode, there are four students in the spotlight. The question of the week is about capos. In the news is about 60 years of the Telecaster guitar and the iconic folks at Fender. And the Take Notes segment is about slash chords. So that's it for miscellaneous guitar stuff from this past week and episode 33's intro. Let's get into the rest of the show. As usual, the student spotlight is up next. In the warm glow of the student spotlight this week, there are four students, Danielle, Elliot, Julia, and Olivia. It's a smaller group this week, even though my schedule was nearly complete. These are the few students who are not falling into the customary end-of-winter slump or daydreaming prematurely about spring and just totally losing their focus. You four are doing well. Continue what you're doing. And please, though, give heed to the areas that I mentioned when we're together that you should focus on and work on in terms of improving your playing and your technique or your interpretation or your phrasing or wherever that particular weak spot or spots are in your overall guitar craftsmanship. But in general, great work, one and all. Keep it up, and I hope to see a couple of more of you in the spotlight next week. Let's move on to the question of the week. This week's question comes from a student who's working on a piece of music that requires a capo. They had a very simple question. Which capo should I get? Well, that's a reasonable question. Of course, I didn't answer him or her directly. I gave them some options. I want them to determine which capo will work best for their purposes and choose it themselves. If you haven't played guitar long, or you have played for a considerable time, but your sphere of experience has not included the use of a capo, and you don't know what it is, let me explain. Capo comes from the Italian word or phrase capo tasto. Capo for head, and tasto is one of the two commonly used or commonly cited Italian words that means fingerboard, or in the case of a guitar, a fretboard. So, fretboard, head, for our purposes. A capo, which is the American pronunciation of capo, is a device that's attached to the neck of the guitar in order to change the tuning. It presses across the span of a chosen fret to raise the tuning of each string. They are commonly used for adjusting the tuning of strings to accommodate a voice or a chord vocabulary, especially a limited chord vocabulary, or both. Sometimes they're used if the radical nature of a tuning change would not be well tolerated by the instrument for instrumental music. In other words, if the strings need to be tuned so high that you're endangering either the neck of the guitar or the bridge of the guitar with the amount of tension that's going to be on the strings, or that you just can't tune the strings that high. So in all of those cases that I've already mentioned, a capo is an appropriate tool to use. Capos can be clamped, toggled, and there used to be one that worked by tightening a really big thumb screw. I don't even know if that's still available. There's even a capo called the third hand that can target particular strings and not every string. This is an exotic capo, but offers great versatility to the guitarist that is playing extremely exotic tunings. The thing to consider in your capo purchase is on what guitar the capo will be placed. You'll purchase your capo according to the width of the neck of that instrument, and I don't mean that you necessarily need to know millimeters, but there's going to be a difference in a capo designed for an electric guitar neck and one designed for a nylon string guitar. There's a huge measurement distance in the widths of those necks. If you plan to use the same capo on differing neck width instruments, which is an understandable budgetary call, I recommend the simple toggle capo. I mean, it's the poor stepsister of all of the cool capos that are on the market, but it's versatile and will accommodate as wide as a nylon string neck as well as a thin electric guitar neck with one purchase and a really inexpensive one. If you will only use your capo on one instrument, the toggle is also fine if you want to spend very little. But if you can manage it, there are various clamp kinds of capos that offer very good pressure and ease and speed of use and change. I will link to the third hand and a couple of other common capos in the show notes, and I will post pictures of a few types there. Now it's time to move along to this week's news. This week's news is celebrating 60 years of the Fender Telecaster. Here's an iconic guitar from an iconic guitar maker. Perhaps better known by non-guitarists for the Stratocaster, Fender's the other guitar or brother or sister of the Strat is the renowned Telecaster, and now it's been around for 60 years. The Telecaster was built for Western swing guitarists, introduced by that name in 1951 and thus predating rock and roll by nearly a half decade. Its bright signature twang became one of the defining and enduring sounds of country music, and it was the electric guitar of choice for pioneer hitmakers such as Merle Haggard, Buck Owens, and Waylon Jennings, and for the noted sidemen such as James Burton and Luther Perkins. More than half a century later, the Telecaster's status as the king of country has not diminished a bit. It's still preferred by the sharpest players and songwriters atop the modern country charts, artists such as Brad Paisley, Marty Stewart, Vince Gill, Keith Urban, and many others. Far removed from the twang of Nashville and Bakersfield, though, the Telecaster has led a fascinating double life. For, on the other hand, and often on the other side of the Atlantic, the Tele has been the weapon of choice for some of rock's most innovative legends and innovators and iconoclasts. Rock and roll embraced the Telecaster with open arms and open minds. Rock royals like Keith Richards, George Harrison, Pete Townsend, Eric Clapton, Jeff Beck, and Ray Davies have all played it. So did the 1960s psychedelic godfathers Syd Barrett and Jimmy Page. In the mid-70s, punk patriarch Joe Strummer led a revolution while brandishing a Telecaster. Later that decade, the Police at first flew the pink flag, but made no attempt to disguise the smart chops and startling creativity of Andy Summers, who forged a widely imitated post-punk guitar sound with his battered Telecaster as the trio rose to chart-topping world success in the 1980s. A decade after that, in the mid-90s, an inventive new generation of Britpop guitarists emerged, led by Blur's Graham Coxon and Radiohead's Johnny Greenwood, both of whom were devotees of the Telecaster. The Tele provides the main instrument sound on both the Led Zeppelin album, the well-known one of 69, and Brad Paisley's 2009 American Saturday Night. It's curious, too, that the same electric guitar that the great Muddy Waters once used to electrify the Delta Blues so forcefully in the 1940s and 50s is the same guitar that bemasked Slipknot guitarist Jim Root currently uses to pulverize all metal audiences across the world. The Tele inhabits different musical worlds that couldn't possibly be farther apart, yet it manages to sound right at home on a foot-tapping 60s-era Buck Owens single, an atmospheric 70s-era Pink Floyd album, a chiming 80s-era pop hit by The Pretenders, an artsy 90s-era electronic excursion by Radiohead, and a 2000-era detuned new metal onslaught by Slipknot. All this from the greatest country music guitar ever. Indeed, the Tele, or Telecaster, still rules the form for which it was intended and invented. Real country music still sounds the way it does because the Telecaster still sounds, well, like itself. I'm going to link to a more extensive article than the one from which I just quoted on the show notes. And I'm also going to link to a YouTube video of James Burton, Jeff Beck, Merle Haggard, Elliot Easton, Keith Urban, Jimmy Stafford, Johnny Lang, Vince Gill, John Five, Chris Shiflett, Jesse Valenzuela, Brent Mason, Matt Chanel, Jimmy Vivino, Richard Patrick, Zach Myers, and Deke Dickerson sharing their thoughts on why the Telecaster has reigned supreme for 60 years. There's a podcast pick in it. If you can guess which one of these guitars I went to high school with, and email me before next week. Now, let's move along to the Take Notes segment. my take notes segment this week is going to be about slash chords. What's a slash chord? It's a chord with a forward slash in its name, like A slash E. Have you seen this chord nomenclature and not known what it meant? As you know, if you're a regular listener or experienced guitarist, anytime you have a chord name that has a number in it, what's indicated is an extra or substitute note in the chord. The number is that note's position in the scale. Similarly, any note, letter, name that follows a slash in the name of a chord indicates the lowest note to be played in that chord. Sometimes it's a chordal tone and sometimes not. When the slash following the letter name is not a chordal tone, it's often because of a moving bass line or that a bass line of some sort is being established. For example, you may see a progression of a C chord, C slash B, C slash A, C slash G. It may be a situation in which the bass line notes are actually picked and then the chords are struck so as to emphasize the walking bass, or perhaps it's not. In a case such as this, I recommend you pick precisely and be sure to get a little emphasis on that bass note as you play through the progression, even if you're not singling out the bass note to play. The whole reason those extra notes are added in is so that the listener, with any kind of ear, is going to hear a bass line that goes C, B, A, G, and most likely then it's going to migrate over to a G chord or some other chord with a G that is a bass note. Okay, now sometimes the slash following note letter name is an extremely inconvenient note to finger, and or is for a single beat of time or a fraction of a beat of time. Now, I'm not including that definite intent of a chord progression like the one I just mentioned, where your bass line is definitely making a walking pattern and it's integral to the music. In cases that are not that way, that's when you need to make a few determinations. If this phantom slash letter note name is really hard to get to or requires a crazy juxtaposition of your fingers only to move them back an instant later. That's when you need to make the determinations such as these. How important to you is the authenticity to the original music? The bigger question is the music you're working from the original music or somebody's tab? And how reliable is it? You better listen to the music to see if it's in a place that requires any listener who knows the song you're playing, if it's not an original one, where their ear is going to expect to hear that. The first passage that comes to my mind is the opening couple of arpeggios of Stairway to Heaven. Your bass line is moving A, G sharp or A flat, depending on what you call that next chord, to a G, to an F sharp, to an F, to an E. I mean, that's why that opening of that particular song in its total simplicity is engaging to the ear. You may not have ever really thought of it that way, but you're really listening to just a chord arpeggio progression that each successive chord has a walking lower bass line. So that's the first thing that comes to my mind, and there you can't compromise on what note follows that slash in those chords. But sometimes you can't even hear the difference between the chord without the slash bass note letter name and the standard chord you'd play in that situation. So that's what you need to really determine. Can you really hear the bass note that's sounding or not? More than half the time, that note is inconsequential when it's not establishing a particular moving bass line. If you're a beginner or intermediate guitarist and the only thing preventing you from playing a song well is that miserable slash chord, play it without the bass note indicated after the slash. I'd recommend practicing the change and eventually mastering it, but I wouldn't let something like that kill your joy if the song is otherwise playable. I am rarely, almost never, ready to suggest embracing compromise, but I think in this kind of situation, it should be considered, and it's even reasonable. That wraps it up for this week's segments of episode 033. let's move along to the outro and wrap this baby up. Okay, we're closing out this podcast with a couple of important bits of information. The first of which is, don't get a book of songs to learn how to play the guitar. Great work, Danielle, Elliot, Julia, and Olivia. Choose a capo with its intended instrument in mind. When in doubt, toggle. The Telecaster is 60 years old and is still the guitar for country, and yet a favorite of rockers from then to now. When confronted with slash chords, determine how integral to the desired sound of the music those bass notes are and either use the suggested bass notes or not. Just a little programming note, a change to this podcast is that the student review, which had previously been the first week of every month, will cease to be recorded monthly. I'm honoring the request of a few students, and rather than dropping them out of the broadcasted review, I'll distribute the review in its entirety in the manner I previously did. Thank you once again for your time and for joining me for this episode of the Guitar Technique Tutor podcast. I hope you heard something thought-provoking, instructional, and/or entertaining. I will include links to anything I mentioned that you might like to explore further in the show notes. Don't forget that my website is guitartechniquetutor.com, GuitarTechniqueTutor.com, and you can reach me by email at guitartechnique@gmail.com. Please take note that there is no tutor in the email address. Don't hesitate to email me with your questions for the question of the week. If I use your question, I will be delighted to send you a Guitar Technique Tutor podcast pick. You can follow me on Twitter, where I'm Guitar Technique, or you can join the GuitarTechniqueTutor.com Facebook page. Links to both are on the GuitarTechniqueTutor.com homepage and podcast page. You'll also find links to subscribe to the podcast in a variety of ways, as well as to subscribe to the show notes by email or by a reader. If you're seeking expert, competent guitar instruction in Bergen and Rockland County towns in which I teach, such as Airmont, Allendale, Fairlawn, Franklin Lakes, Glen Rock, Hawthorne, Hohokus, Hilburn, Mahwa, Midland Park, Montvale, Oradell, Paramus, Park Ridge, Ramsey, Ridgewood, River Edge, Saddlebrook, Saddle River, Suffern, Tallman, Teaneck, Tuxedo, Upper Saddle River, Waldwick, Washington Township, Westwood, Woodcliff Lake, or Wyckoff, please contact me. Calling is best, and my phone number's on the website. If we can coordinate our schedules and you're a good candidate to learn to play the guitar, perhaps we can work together. Practice, have a great week, and until next time, I'm your host, D.A. Arliss, doing my part to spread the excellence, one guitarist at a time.